Oh, we're live now. I can't say.
Yeah, we're live now. I've been debating that. I guess we can do a few minutes of not spoiler. I don't know how we would talk about it without spoiling.
Well, you
Hi,
say
folks,
you
and
like
welcome
it or not.
To
yes.
Welcome to the Admiral's Roundtable. We're going to talk about the wonderful book Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. Excuse me. I'm going to start this off with
that.
We have a more international than usual cast of characters tonight because I'm the only Yank in the bunch. Let's go. We'll go around the table. I don't know if you guys can see. We'll start down here. Just as I point to you, introduce yourselves.
Hello, I am No Sleep Stupid Human. my name is Boz, former podcaster and friend of Rick's from a very long time ago.
Brother from another mother and one of the most awesome people on Earth, and you all know Boz. And now we'll go down here to the New Zealand corner.
Kia ora, I'm Andy. I'm in New Zealand, and I've read this book.
Amazing.
And now, Vetter.
Hello, Vetter. I'm also Andy, but I'm not in New Zealand. I'm in London. And I'm the host of the Great Derelict podcast and the Into the Expanse podcast. And someone said, who's read Project Hail Mary? And I just said, I have. And the next thing I know, I'm on a podcast.
That's generally how this stuff works, isn't it, Andy?
Well, actually, this is all Boz's fault because I wasn't... After the whole pandemic thing, my brain has kind of gotten out of sync. I'm starting to get back into recording podcasts, and I've recorded a shitload of them in the last 2 weeks. I've even edited and put out a couple.
Wow.
But Boz was like, because I was like, I was raving about the book, and Boz was like, when you do the inevitable podcast about the book, I want to be on it. And I was like, that's a good idea. Let's do one.
So look, hold on a minute, right? So the thought of doing a podcast about this book hadn't crossed your mind when you had the author on a podcast once talking about his book, The Martian, before anyone knew what the fuck it was. Excuse my French. Sorry, I'm live on the internet. Always happens. Like, the Martian, it blown up in literary circles, but, like, the Matt Damon thing hadn't really come out yet. Like, that was all predated all of that, didn't it?
Yeah. And that's...
In fact, just to finish, I was listening to that episode of the podcast. You got 10 minutes into the podcast. I stopped the podcast, listened to the entire audiobook, then came back to finish the podcast. That is literally the only time I've ever done that. So yeah, I thought you'd do a show about this book.
Okay, and here's what happened. I thought about when after I finished, his second book, Artemis, came out, and the reviews were lackluster and so I haven't read it, and I felt really bad about that, but and we can talk about that in a minute. Andy,
look,
I like so then when Project Hail Mary came out, I was like, and then a podcast I've been listening to since I started listening to podcasts, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, had Andy Weir on. And they were talking about it, and I listened to up to when they said, all right, now we're going to spoil. And I shut it off, and I was like, all right, this sounds like it's something I need to read. And then I started checking out the reviews. They were just, like, through the roof. And I was like, all right, as soon as it hit audio, I bought it on Amazon, or on Audible, and I listened to it in, like, a week, which, I like to stretch books out because, I have a long commute to work, but I'm also off work right now, and stuff, and I read it and I loved it. I was like, I would love to talk to Andy Weir about this book again, but there's no way in hell he's going to take my call now. And that's as far as it went, because I was like, I want to talk to Andy about this, and no, I can't imagine he would even say yes. And then I just sort of went on, and then you were like, let's do it, and I was like, that is so fucking obvious, what the hell is wrong with me?
Age.
So yeah, there is that, yeah. So I'm glad you gave me a nudge.
Okay.
And hi, Deb, and hi, Facebook user. Not sure which one you are, but we do well. How do you? have you guys read our Artemis?
I guess.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was really good. I'm a big defender of it, actually. I think it's a really, really great book. It's a little bit of a departure from The Martian in that it adds, you know, all these action-adventure elements, whereas The Martian is just like, we all want this one guy to survive, and it's very cut and dry. But Artemis is great. I was actually just flipping through yesterday and got really engrossed with it. Just meant to do a brush up, and then like 2 hours later I've read the whole thing again.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And wow, you read fast.
Yeah. Well, you
can just devour him, his writing. It's so great.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his style I love, because that was one of the things that hooked me in absolutely with The Martian. And
Hey Elton. Okay.
Being really sweary as well also helps in my book. But the so I like his style of writing and his style of building a story, but at the end of Artemis I was nonplussed. I didn't dislike it, but I didn't love it either. But The Martian's such a tough act to follow.
It's almost the perfect book.
Yeah. I mean, there's very few books I'll listen to twice in a month. Like, there's very few books I'll listen to twice ever. I have to listen to him because I'm a slow reader, and it takes me a year and a half to read a single book. With Audible, I get through, well, one a month.
Yeah. So, and your first month is free.
Yeah.
Go to audible.com/ no, we're not sponsoring Rick. So. Well, maybe I'll check it out. You know, I'm getting ready to drive up to South Carolina for a family reunion. And I'm listening to Michael Collins, who was the command module pilot for Apollo 11. I'm listening to his book, Carrying the Fire. And it's really good, but it's dry as fuck. It's just
love
not
that.
Keeping me awake.
Man's an engineer, not an author.
Well, I generally love getting into the minutia of the space program. You know, the more technical details, the better for me. But for some reason, this one is just like not... I'm enjoying it when I'm listening to it, but like trying to stay awake while I'm driving, it's just not doing that. So maybe I'll pick up Artemis for the drive.
Well, the audiobook is read by
Rosario Dawson.
That's correct. So just as a performance, it's very good. Artemis. I like Artemis quite a bit. It is a departure from The Martian, but that's nice. I mean, it's a difficult second album, as you'd imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And briefly in the green room, we were all talking about The Expanse. And one of the things, and I love me The Expanse, but one of the recurring themes of The Expanse is the absolute lack of health and safety when it comes to airlocks. I mean, look, you're living in this world now where you're regularly spending your time in space on these ships, and every 5 minutes someone's going in the airlock and being spaced, and there's no big button that if you're in an airlock you can press to stop it being spaced.
There isn't, is there?
There isn't. And Andy Weir goes to great lengths. I think there's an entire chapter just spent on the minutia of how hard it is to break an airlock. And I appreciate that. I was like, that's good. Someone has spent some time and thought, this makes sense. So yeah, that was good.
The controls belong inside the room.
where's the panic button? There should be health and safety. But yeah, I really enjoy it. And another thing I really enjoy is I like, firstly, strong non-white female protagonist throughout there. And it's just a variety of different characters from what you have in The Martian. Look, I love me The Martian, especially the R.C. Bray narration. But I know I'm jumping the gun. Project Hail Mary is basically The Martian with Rocky.
And I'm
a little bit curious if that might be a response to the reception that Artemis had.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm no author, but I've certainly, you know, as a podcaster, kind of done the, all right, my first show was a big hit, as far as it goes. You know, Starbase 66. And so I want to do something different. And I've tried to do a bunch of somethings different that never really lasted as long. And finally I went, fuck it, I'll go back to what I was doing and everybody likes it. So I can certainly relate to that.
Yeah, sure.
When I started reading... All right. I think it's pretty clear that we all like the book.
Yeah.
And that we certainly recommend it. And if you haven't read it, and if you're here trying to get, like... a non-spoilery sort of review about it, Sorry. we love the book.
One small note before you kind of get into things. This is a book that definitely benefits from listening to the audiobook over the written book, I would say.
Oh,
yes. There's a mechanism that he employs in the audiobook, and it's a fantastic narration by Ray Porter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But this is a story I think it's worth doing through audio than reading.
Do they do the musical language?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, fantastic. I have to hear that.
There's some brilliant little twists towards the end that they do with that, mm-hmm. which just made me very happy.
So anyway, and we'll talk about that, because that's a great aspect of it. And I was curious, because I'm glad we have someone who actually read the book, read the physical book, so that we can compare. This is going to be spoiled to death. So if you haven't read the book yet and you're on the fence, get off the fence, go buy it, go to Audible and listen to it, or go to your bookstore and buy it, or go to Amazon and order it. It's fantastic. I will say, although now that I see the actual book, I kind of understand it. It's a little pricey on Amazon. I was like, why is a paperback book $20? But it's a big ass book.
And also, I just really, really want to point this out. This cover art has been used not once, not twice, three times in the art.
Hey, stock images are expensive, man, okay?
Exactly. You get your money's
worth. Just rotate it 90 degrees, use it again, it works.
Yeah, image from stock, whatever, shutterstock.
Yeah, shuttlestock would be more appropriate.
And I actually work in a bookstore, and I had a fun afternoon wandering around the sci-fi section trying to find this clip art somewhere else. I found it on two other books.
Oh, Emma, love, how
lazy.
You doing? See you as you're putting little Abby to bed. Thanks for dropping by, and hope you know, if you can stick around, that's great. If not, I understand that babies are a lot of work. But great to see you. Yeah, Deb. Okay, wait a minute. All right, one last spoiler-free thing I can say if you're here to kind of get to feel out whether you want to read the book or not. This is very, very, very science fiction. Okay? Ooh. There's a little bit of whimsy in this book, but if you're looking for Star Wars, this ain't it. Okay? This is what I love. This is the nuts and bolts, as realistic as you can get given the circumstances, kind of science fiction. This is, you know, in fact, when one of the major characters shows up, I was like, is he really doing this?
Yeah. Did Andy Weir go there?
Yeah. I was like, this has to be some sort of... if that's your thing, definitely check this out. It's awesome. And that's all I, you know, from this point on, unless any of y'all have anything else you want to add that's kind of not spoilery.
Who would have believed that Project Hail Mary was his sled from when he was a child all along?
And he was, I would dead say, the you, whole time.
If you don't read, you have no intention of reading to or listening to any kind of sci-fi book ever. I'm just thinking of one person in particular who used to listen to my reviews of horror movies, so he never used to have to watch them. Great, watch his podcast. Enjoy. Oh, yeah, you as well. Yeah.
I watched some.
Some.
Oh, God, I was trying to take a nap the other day, and I started thinking about The Descent for some reason, and then I couldn't sleep anymore.
Oh, fuck, yeah. You're totally right on that one.
I love that scene.
That scene towards the end where she finds her friend that we thought was dead. Never mind.
Don't get me started. I can hijack this so easily. I don't have a show anymore.
Sounds like a challenge.
It hardly. So from here on out, it's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't read the book, navigate away if you're listening to us live, or pause it if you're listening to the podcast, and go read, listen, and engulf and consume, absorb the book, and then come back and join us again. So
welcome back.
Hi.
Yeah, so this, it's funny, we were kind of talking about how, you know, the second book, and I'm glad you mentioned Andy, London Andy, that it's kind of like the second album syndrome. because I, you know, I've heard musicians say you work for years on that first album and you put it out and it's a hit, and then they want something in 6 months, and so your second album is almost inevitably worse, or at least not as good.
Well, they always want the same. And, you know, if you want to grow as an artist, you want to break away from that. Otherwise, you are typecast and that is all you are doing for the rest of time. So Artemis, I still think, is similar enough to The Martian that it kind of meets that criteria. Mm-hmm. But it's different enough that I think people who were just expecting The Martian again. And the other thing I think mm-hmm. to remember is the way The Martian was originally done was it was effectively group thought, wasn't it? You know, he kind of released it chapter by chapter over mm-hmm. a period.
The interview when I heard him on the Skeptics Guide, they actually brought that up, and they said, did you crowdsource this one the way you did The Martian? And he said, you know, the crowdsourcing of The Martian has been a little bit exaggerated. Yes, he did put it out chapter by chapter online, but I think he's getting a little frustrated with people thinking that the internet helped him write the book.
Oh, no, I wasn't suggesting it helped it buy the book. I'm suggesting the way you take in the book, because...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Someone finds a chapter, this is amazing. You've got a long wait for the next one. You're eager. It kind of builds up that level of anticipation. Mm-hmm. And then you have a core of really hardcore, like, this was great. You must... Yeah, you've got people going and advocating for you. And if they're advocating for The Martian, and then you turn around, you've got to check out Artemis now as well. But if you weren't... Well, if you were invested into that, now you feel like, well, this isn't the thing that I had before, and you don't like it. Yeah. And then I personally think Artemis is a more mature novel than mm-hmm. either The Martian or Project Hail Mary, and I think that might have also been a little bit of a. So I know we're not really here to talk about Artemis, but I love Artemis.
No, I'm totally fine with. You
it's
know,
all in the body of work.
Yeah, and having actually spoken with him. And I don't know if it's available. That was back in the bad old days. So I don't know if it's still available.
It was in the before times.
In the before times. Yeah. I'll dig it out and post it. Andy,
yeah,
I mean, you know, he's either a really nice guy or he's just really good at sounding like one on interviews. But there's a lot of Andy's going around now. Andy Weir is a really hoopy fruit. Like Boz said earlier, after I read The Martian, and this was just after he had optioned the movie. There were just rumors that Spielberg was going to do it, and so I was just like, I love this book. I found into his website and sent him an email and said, hey, I'm on this tiny little podcast, but I'd love to talk to you about The Martian. And he came on and we had a great conversation. And he's just a really nice guy. And listening to him on other podcasts, he's still just a really nice guy, but he's now the hot shit. And Project Hail Mary is already being made into a movie.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
With what's his name? Handsome Mick.
Was it not Ryan? Not Ryan Reynolds, but that class of human.
Ryan Gosling.
Gosling, that's it.
Gosling.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That work.
But you know, it's in that pre-production stage where. I haven't seen that yet. Actually.
Oh, fuck.
Gravity's a bitch.
It's just not one and a half times.
That's the Neil Armstrong. Oh, you know what? Okay, here's maybe a funny story about that book. I didn't recognize the cover because they jazzed it up. My wife is a Southern Baptist, which means all of her family are Southern Baptists, which means none of them... I'm not even part of their universe as far as the stuff I like. So, well, that doesn't really help. She says her cousins are Episcopalian.
Say hi for me.
But the year that First Man, that's Neil Armstrong's biography came out, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd really like to read that book. And I guess one of her aunts or uncles was like, what does your husband like? And she told them that would be, and he's like an airline pilot and, you know, ex Air Force and stuff. And so they were like, it was kind of like my parents whenever I would do something normal that they could relate to, they'd latch onto it. And so they gave me that book for Christmas one year. And I was like, cool, because, you know, I love space, you know, and I started reading it. And I got about as far as they're talking about Neil Armstrong's mother being, you know, what she brought to a church potluck one weekend. And I was just like, ah.
That's First Man.
Yeah.
That is it. That's the film. So.
Oh, really?
You know, that is it. Yeah, okay. You're done. if you don't like that aspect, you won't enjoy First Man.
From what I slept really well for it on the plane. To various other space, early space flight books, Neil Armstrong wasn't the funnest guy on Earth.
Right.
Yeah, you need to. I know you don't do Apple things, but check out For All Mankind.
I have been tempted. You know, I'm not that into alternate history kind of stuff, but that one, especially because Mike and Denise Okuda are involved in it. They are, you know, two of the higher ups in the design of all Star Trek from TNG onward.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was going to say, do you enjoy Von Moore's Galactica?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. The first episode of For All Mankind is the most tense 1 hour of television I've seen since 33.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I loved it because I didn't know what was coming. I read nothing
exactly
about it.
Exactly for that reason. We all know how Apollo 11 went.
Yeah.
So you're watching that first episode and you do not know how Apollo 11 is going to go.
Okay.
You think you do. You do not. And if I could put a little sneaky plug in, I just did an entire podcast on For All Mankind with a couple of people. So worth checking out.
Oh, cool. Cool. And I definitely want to get your Expanse podcast. We'll get to all of that at the end. We'll all plug our stuff. But I did not know you were doing an Expanse podcast, and I want to check it out. Because I this isn't an Expanse show, but what the hell? Tangents are our business. I was a little late to the Expanse for some reason, and then I watched both like season one and two, totally back to back. And fell in love with it, and then I started listening to the books, and I just tore through all 8 books in maybe it may have been like 6 months because it was, you know, 8 very long books, but it was just like I when it was done I wanted more. I hope they're writing more, but yeah, it's absolutely one of the best science fiction shows ever, and certainly one of the best on TV today, as one of y'all said earlier.
We should probably talk about this book, yeah?
Yeah, Project Hail Mary. I don't necessarily want to synopsize the plot, because if you're still here, you've read the book. And if you haven't read the book, why are you still here? I really like Ryland Grace because he's just a guy. In fact, he's so not a hero that at one point in the book, you're just like, you just want to slap him. I was really interesting how Weir took this guy who is a high school science teacher. High school? No, not even high school. It's like
it's kind of younger high school, but yeah, it's high school.
Yeah, high school science teacher, and just thrusts him into the middle of this situation. I really like books that kind of drop you into the middle of what's going on, and you kind of have to figure it out as you're going. And I think Weir does that really well with this book, because he takes a trope that I absolutely loathe, which is a crew waking up and not knowing who they are and where they are. Now, granted, this isn't a crew; this is one guy, but and he does it in a way that I absolutely loved it. Last year, I interviewed Joe Malazzi, who was executive producer and writer on Stargate SG-1 from season 4 on, and then Stargate Atlantis and then Universe. But he also was the showrunner for Dark Matter. And I didn't admit during the interview that I watched the first episode of Dark Matter, which is a bunch of folks waking up in a spaceship and not knowing who the hell they are. And by the end, I was like, I don't care. And I didn't go back. But he does this. Go ahead.
I would say glad he pulled it off in this case, because you'd have checked out after two chapters if that was the case with this one.
Yeah, and it. But the thing is, it wasn't like I was like, all right, this better go somewhere soon or I'm out. It didn't even dawn on me how much I don't like that until I was like halfway through the book and I was like, hey, wait a minute.
He slipped one past you.
Yeah.
And it sets up in the beginning, like I was thinking, oh, he's going to be battling this computer that's taken control of his ship. That's what the whole book is going to be.
Yeah, there's a whole chapter of him just slapping away robot hands. Get off!
Buzzsaw, dentist drill.
Yeah, yes.
Syringe.
Yeah, I liked the use of flashbacks, which... have any of y'all ever read any of Anne Rice's books?
No.
Some of them.
Okay. She was a not was, she's not dead, but she's not.
She was good.
Yeah. I'm still her last list, or I think it maybe was her second to the last Lestat book now. I think she's still writing. I used to buy her books because they were so big and I knew I would be enjoying this book for a while, and like her she did a Lestat book somewhere in 2009, 2010, something like that, and I got about halfway through it and I just stopped reading it because it was so boring.
Yep. Yo también. Exactly the same. And I also, on starting that book, I'm like, right, I'm setting up a preternatural count, and you can only say that word so many times before I stop reading this book.
Yeah.
I didn't get very far. Talk about overused.
But I kind of like using flashbacks as a storytelling
vehicle. That one. Device. The one.
Device. Thank you. That's a great word. I just locked up. Sorry, folks. It's been a long weird day. So if I'm a little out of it, I apologize. In fact, at some point very soon, I'm going to ask y'all to keep talking, and I'm going to go fix myself another drink. Boss, how did you come to the book?
I don't know. I think it was just an Audible recommendation, and I just saw the name Andy Weir. I had no idea he'd written a new one. And then, like you guys, I looked at the number of reviews and I went, oh, they're largely positive. Had a credit straight away. There was no question. And I mainlined it in about 4 days, I think. Just every time I had any downtime, there was an earpod in and I was listening. And my word, did I... It's not often I get into it, but I get jaded with books now because I guess I'm spoiled being one of the biggest Scott Sigler fans on Earth. So I love all his stuff, and that sets your expectations at a certain level. People recommend other books, other franchises. I listen to book one. I've listened to book one of so many seven-book series and just never carried on. And then you get something like Patrick Rothfuss, and The Name of the Wind, which is two or three brilliant books, but a completely unfinished story. Where's the next one? Why are you George R.R. Martin in us? It's not fair. So yeah, especially in the sci-fi realm, the action, there's a lot of zombie books. I've tried all kinds, and just I love Max Brooks, but his latest one about Bigfoots, Big Feet, is it Big Feet or Bigfoots? I don't know.
Soon to be a film from Quentin Tarantino.
Is, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I nearly went for that one. Yeah. And again, on the Audible production there, you've got Nathan Fillion, you've got all these big names on the cast list. Wow, that'd be amazing. Sorry, no.
It doesn't matter who you've got reading it if the book is shit.
Yeah. And now, obviously, there's a really nice tie-in for a massive Scott Sigler fan, because Scott Sigler, for anyone who knows him, is hard science fiction horror author, one of the best on the planet. He is my Stephen King. And he always used to narrate his own books. He'd write one, and then he would actually podcast his books. That's how he got notoriety. That's how we found him. Each week, different episode. And he's consistently put out a show per week for, I don't know, it must be close to 14, 15 years now or something. It's a long old time.
Wow.
And that's why the fans are called junkies, because we're like, we want the next episode. Of course, now what happens is it drops on Audible, we get the whole book. But he just got to the point where he's such a prolific writer, he needed the writing time, and recording the audio took so long. So they decided to get for his main published books, the voice of his books is Ray Porter.
Yeah.
I sort of fell in love with what he did, and Scott had him on his podcast the other week, and they interviewed him. And obviously, I didn't know, because it was hacked to bits, the Schneider cut. He was the voice of Darkseid as well, but was completely cut from the theatrical release. All of his lines gone. So he did all of that work and then never made the movie. So of course, the Schneider cut, he was really excited, and so was I to see that. And then, of course,
I'm gonna have to check that out again. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So of course, him reading this book, I was just like, perfection. And he does different accents so well, he does different devices so well, and as we talk about how he interacts the two languages and stuff, which I'm sure we'll get to, I couldn't turn it off. Just, and I'm on my second listen through already. Gongzi, I know for a fact, has listened to it 3 times.
Oh, so, wow.
I don't know why that's
cool. Yeah, because I remember Pope, when I raved about it, Gogs was like, really? All right, I'm going to check it out. And then he, like, a few days later, he's like, you bastard, now I'm hooked on it. London Andy, how did you come to the book?
Well, I actually first heard about Project Hail Mary from an interview Andy Weir gave with Adam Savage quite a while ago. I think this was just about the time Artemis was being published, and, you know, so what else have you got working? And Project Hail Mary was mentioned, and so it was on my radar for a while. As soon as it was available for pre-order, I put it down. But when I saw that Ray Porter was doing the narration, one of my favorite science fiction series at the minute to listen to are the Bobbyverse series by Dennis
Taylor.
Oh, I love
those books so much.
Oh, good. But so, you know, as soon as I saw that, I was just like, you had my curiosity, now you have my attention. So I was straight away into that, because, you know, it's Andy Weir, Ray Porter, what's not to love? And so, yeah, I kind of dived into it. I mean, it might have been a little bit to its detriment, though, because I think Dennis E. Taylor's Bobbyverse books are some of the best hard sci-fi you can get. And Absolutely. The way Ray Porter delivers it is really good. But ironically, for an Andy Weir one, there's some of the stuff in here which I felt strayed a bit away more towards that space fantasy stuff, if you will. And I found that a little disconcerting, especially when I'm used to the Bobbyverse stuff, which is so, like, you know, researched, all this is plausible, and, you know,
it's all hardware.
It's all hardware, you know, and, you know, replicants and stuff. If you don't listen to the Bobbyverse, you probably should. But So that was kind of my first into it. But yeah, I was always going to check this out because of my love of Andy Weir and because of my love of Ray Porter. And yeah, when you kind of, I'm just going to spoil it. There's an alien in here called Rocky who speaks through musical tones. At least that's how it's presented within the audiobook. And in there, they play audio notes in the through a keyboard or something. They synthesize something for his dialogue.
Great. And how is it done in the book?
I was going to say, I'm really curious to know how it's presented in the book, but in here.
Yeah, let me just find some.
I was going to say A flat, G sharp, but.
They just kind of put in, where are we? A few little musical notes, and it doesn't really make any sense when you read it as a written thing. And so this is one of those things where, for the first time, I'd probably say this would be better as an audiobook.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, because I was going to mention that for Mother's Day, I went to our local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, to find some books that my wife had wanted. And while I was there, I was like, I wonder. And so I went over and I grabbed a copy of Hail Mary, or Project Hail Mary, and I'm looking through and I'm trying to find a chapter where Rocky's talking before they're translated. Right. And then I was like, oh, that is so cool how they did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that was a really great storytelling device. And, you know, as you say, Andy Ray Porter's so good. I call him Andy Porter. There's too many Andys on this podcast. But, Ray Porter, he does voices so well. I mean, I personally say the only person that comes close is R.C. Bray in the original Martian narration, because, you know, when he's kind of describing the other characters, great. But in here, you know, when he's talking about, I've forgotten her name, but who's the Danish woman who's
Eva Stratt.
Stratt.
Stratt. Yeah. When you're doing Stratt, you know, you just the way she he does her voice and everything, you know, is fantastic. When he's doing Russian voices and all that as well, it's really, really good, and I love that. So, you know, this I probably blitzed through this in a day or three, just like because I just couldn't put it down to listen to it. I will say though, at the end of it, when I would probably say for me, this is his worst book. But that's a bit like saying, you know, it's but it's just the other two books he's got there. You know, you got The Martian, you got Artemis, and this, and I think that's largely because this felt a little tropey almost, and I don't know if it feels tropey because it's trying to ape The Martian, or because after listening to stuff like the Bobbyverse series, like the Expeditionary Force books and stuff like that, it felt a little convenient in places. Mm-hmm. You know, I could almost see an entire story where he could never communicate correctly with Rocky, where he's always trying to guess and do that. But no, in this one, it's like, oh, you're speaking a musical tone. Well, I just so happen to have every piece of software ever devised by mankind here on Wikipedia. Doot, 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 doot. Oh, and now we can
Fair
talk.
Enough.
But you know what? I like that about it, because I like how he and you're not wrong. It's kind of like having a favorite band where you recognize their style and you're like, okay, that kind of sounds like this other song, but I still like it.
Yeah, it's Bon Jovi's It's My Life, and that's the song everybody wanted them to do. It's just the same chord progression, the same song structure, but slightly different.
Or it's like Rush, which is one of my favorite bands, but they've got some songs, and I'm like, that is exactly like this song, but it's going on for 20 minutes longer.
Does not compute.
Or Star Trek, totally agree, Andrew. Soundtrack, which is like literally he takes the entire Battle of a Mutara Nebula and just sticks it in for when Ripley goes to save all the moons.
New Zealand, Andy, how did you come across the book?
Like I said, I work in a bookstore, and I had no idea this was coming out, but we get like special previews. So I got this like 4 months before it was actually released, so it doesn't have a barcode. Sweet. It says launching.
Amazing.
So I just was like browsing around the free shelf in the store, in the staff room, and I was like, I know this name. Andy Weir. Holy crap. I just like grabbed it, ripped through it, just on the basis of his name. I had no idea what it was about. To be honest with you, I think Hail Mary is kind of like an Americanism, and it's not really a common phrase in our lingo. So I was like, I don't know what this is about. I see there's an astronaut in distress. That's great. It's Andy Weir does it again.
I had a bit of an issue with that name because he's trying to get his memory back. He's discovering who he is slowly, slowly. Then he sees the patch on the wall. He discovers that this mission is called the Hail Mary. Then it's ages later that he realizes, oh, this is a suicide mission. Like, dude, you're on a spaceship called the Hail Mary. So for those who don't know, a Hail Mary in American football is, the clock's running out, fuck it, lob it, just see if someone catches it. So you know you're screwed if you're on a ship called that. So just...
Well, it could have been a million to one shot, though. I mean, I still think Hail Marys are... It's probably a suicide mission, but there might be a chance. I'm a bit more concerned with... there's a big revelation, which I won't spoil right now, because it's a really good twist in there. But how come his name's on the patch?
Yeah, that's...
You're right.
He shouldn't have had time to put his name on the patch. But,
I hadn't thought of that.
That's
that point. There's one other... Now, when I talk to Andy about The Martian...
Not either of these two.
No. When I talk to Andy Weir about
the main Martian, Andy.
I did ask him. I was like, "Is there anything in the book that you know it was a concession to narrative that wasn't necessarily accurate?" And he said, "Yeah, there's no way there would be a windstorm strong enough on Mars to do any damage to anyone, but it was necessary for the story."
Not only that, but the whole big deal about using the big Chinese booster, why didn't they just assemble stuff in orbit? That bugs me.
Well, but assembling stuff in orbit isn't as easy yet. as we...
I've played Kerbal Space Program. You just dock them together.
It's cool. Like Elon, isn't it? Say, I need like half a dozen Falcon 9s.
Yeah, there you go.
Give me 6 weeks. It'll be fine.
And if I could talk to him, and I haven't totally abandoned the thought of trying to get in touch with him. I may, you know, there's always a chance he might go, eh, what the hell? I got 10 minutes to waste.
Don't let him watch this first. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. You know, the fact that his name was on the patch, actually, that didn't dawn on me until after I read the book, and then I saw somebody mention it. The thing that bothered me and maybe he mentions it at some point and I missed it. And if so, please correct me on this. Rocky's people don't see. They don't use the visible spectrum of light. They don't use any spectrum of light. They don't understand radiation. All they use is sound. How the hell did they know there was anything outside of their atmosphere?
They do reference that. I don't remember how they referenced it, but they do mention that they didn't even realize there were stars and all that until, I think it might be space radio waves or something like that, but there was...
Yeah, I recall
it is at least addressed.
Okay, yeah, because it was one of those things that I was so far and that's the one of the few drawbacks to audiobooks. With a physical book, you go, wait a minute, and you flip back. With an audiobook, there's no way.
Which chapter was that?
Back 30 seconds, back 30 seconds, back 30 seconds.
I feel like in Project Hail Mary, this main character is stumbling along. And as you guys have kind of said, it gets a bit tropey and a bit convenient, you know. Oh no, here's another problem. How could they possibly hear that? And here's a paragraph with the solution. How do we talk to each other? Oh, here's this. You know, I feel like while I was reading this, Andy Weir was sitting off in the corner eating a packet of chips, just kind of, and I'm like, you know, every now and then I look up and look over and go, Andy, I see what you did there. And he gives me the finger guns and a wink. And, I got you, buddy.
And so
he takes this right.
Deb says, patches are easy to make. You're right, they are.
Sure.
Maybe somebody was like, let's make him a patch. Maybe that'll make him feel better.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
But you see, I've always been that guy who will happily go into a Star Wars prequel and just let it wash over and not hate it until I come out and listen to what other people thought. Don't start that game. You don't want to see how many I got downstairs.
That's what she said.
I won't start on all that again. Just then I listened to other people sort of start to pick them apart, and I'm just like, oh, but I loved it initially because I just didn't give it enough thought. I just let the tidal wave of all that convenience just wash over me in a big glorious story. I mean, they were wrong. Good. Sometimes it just pisses me right off. It's funny, you mentioned Expeditionary Force. Like, I started into book two of that, and that became so hit the same markers over and over.
Oh no, Expeditionary Force, every single book is the same. I'm up to book four at the minute now, and it's the same book every single time.
See, I can't do it.
Now, the reason I can get through it is because R.C. Bray's narration is just sublime. I fully admit that is just the same one. But that first book was very good at the way it kind of addressed those bits, and it all made sense after that.
But even in book one, didn't he do it like four times, like, oh, I don't believe it, I didn't think of that, and you stupid monkey-brained human came up with this, and I'm all the brains of the galaxy, and I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, but when you get Skippy, it's a shiny beer can which talks and does science. You know, I mean, they literally just say, it's far too much for you to understand, so just go with it. And I'm okay with that. Whereas what you have here is you have him saying, oh, I have a problem. And again, not a criticism. I really like the book. But, you know, it's literally, oh, gee, if only there was a way we could do this. Oh, no, it's fine. We have the entirety of all human software. We have Windows 3.11, you know, network edition on there. Why? Why not? You know, it was just like, why not?
And sometimes when there's a problem that, you know, he doesn't want to solve, the author, I mean, he just says, oh, you know, Rocky's people have already figured that out.
I'm okay with that.
Intelligent aliens.
I'm okay with that to a point. But it was it's one of those things that it's really, really great. You know, it's like a really nice tapestry, what have you. But then you turned it around, and all of a sudden you're just seeing all the connecting wires going to the point sort of thing, and you go, okay, now I see how it's made. It's not quite as impressive, is it? I mean, it's still good, but, yeah. You know.
And now I think about empathizing with our main character, and it's like, so he's got all of the software in the world and these terabytes of drives on this ship,
yeah.
And he's facing lots of years traveling back to Earth, doesn't want to go in a coma again. It's like, yeah, but you've got like World of Goo and like games like that, and I'm thinking Rocky would have been screwed. He would have just died in space because I'd have just been playing computer games all the way home,
yeah.
Just oblivious to the rest of the thing.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. Like Mass Effect Legendary Edition, that's going to take up at least 6 years while you go through every possible
edition
of that.
Yeah, I'm on.
You know, it's just like,
I'm on shepherd mode at the moment, trying to be the biggest cow I can throughout the galaxy. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think they did really well is, you know, the flashbacks that you were alluding to, and the way that story for me was the strongest part of the story. It was teasing out the backstory, because that went in places I didn't expect, and it was only when you get that final revelation that, oh no, you didn't volunteer, you were volunteered. Mm-hmm. That was so good.
It was.
But by the time you get to that point, then when you keep coming back to the Rocky stuff, it's a lot weaker because that had been so strong. And it almost feels like he's actually written two stories here, and he's realized that this story is okay, this story is pretty good, but if I cut them up, this good story becomes great because you're just getting it piecemeal as you're going along and you're wanting. And this other story is still good, but, you know, because this one's getting better and better and better, this one's just okay. Can we go back to Strat, please? I want to go and see what Yuri's doing on the Chinese aircraft carrier with all the nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Can we see Strat in court at least three more times, please? Because that was one of my favourite scenes.
The stuff with Strat was just so much more entertaining, and I really enjoyed that. And if I do have... Well, I've already said some criticism, but one thing I would have liked, and this is one of the things I think that The Martian, the film, did better than the book, it gave you that one scene at the end where you could see him back on Earth, and, you know, he's teaching. I'd have just liked a scene, a little coda. Just, you know, I don't even necessarily need, you know, I don't need that moment at the end where everyone's freeze frame, and so Strat was sentenced to 95 years in prison. You never saw, you know, but just something so you can just get a sense of what
was happening. Wait. Was the coda in this book not quite good enough?
No, it wasn't about Earth, was it?
Earth was a
burning fireball of nuclear waste, and have the zombies taken over? You know, we don't know.
I love the coda. I thought it was so... I mean, we're spoiling it, right? Like, I thought he was going home. And to be honest, the entire book, I was convinced he was going home to marry that woman that he worked with.
Even though she's 80.
Yeah, and she's aged. And he goes and lives on the alien planet, just hangs out with his buddy. It was like, whoa!
You know, it was funny when they separated, and Deb says, "Yeah, it wouldn't have been as good if it was told linearly." And I totally agree with you. I think we all agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. It's stronger because of that structure.
Yeah,
but it's greater than the sum of its parts. But some of its parts are stronger than other parts.
Yeah, and listening to the interview with him, a lot of the stuff came from a book that he wrote 75,000 words of and then decided it wasn't going anywhere and scrapped it.
Okay.
The whole astrophage thing came from that.
Wow.
And I don't remember the specifics, but there were other aspects of this book that were taken from this other book he was writing, that ultimately just wasn't working. And so he was like, all right, we're starting over. And that's where Project Hail Mary came from.
That's something to talk about. The invention of a alien life form on a microscopic level. I thought that was genius. And the amount of thought that went into that, and the real science, and the approach to checking them out. And it's very sciencey, but it's done in such an entertaining way that it doesn't get too much. There's always points in these books where I looked away, or because I'm listening, I glazed over a bit, and then that's where the re-listen comes in. Just going back, oh yeah, I missed that before. I actually missed the Petrova line bit in the first listen. into what it was that they'd actually... I knew that they'd seen the line, but I didn't realise it was infrared light they'd seen. Obviously, it became clear later in the book, but...
Yeah.
Interestingly, this week, I heard on the news 2 days ago that scientists have said officially that Venus is too harsh an environment for any kind of life to exist.
You know, when all of those stories came out, I was like, no. No. If you're not familiar with what Boz is talking about, folks, a couple of months ago, maybe a little longer, there were some observations of chemical compounds in the upper atmosphere of Venus that might, maybe could, possibly, sort of, if you squint just the right way, be life.
That's right.
Like, you know, one of the ways these compounds could exist is biological. So they were, you know, people were imagining just, you know, floating mats of bacteria in the upper atmosphere of Venus and stuff like that. I was very skeptical of that because Venus is just a fucking hell world all around.
Also, that's Canada this month.
Sounds like my ex.
You guys keep bringing up these wonderful things, and then it just kind of knocks the marbles in my head going in different directions. When I was listening to the book the first time, and he, you know, and when Rocky and Ryland split, and they were heading to their respective planets, and supposedly everything was sorted, and I was like, why are we still dealing with the day to day? Can we just cut to Earth? And after a while, I was like, okay, something's going to happen. Okay, I'm going to brag a little bit here. And, you know, you're welcome to believe me or don't believe me. But did anyone else, when they were, you know, at the beginning of the book, when they were like, we need a name for this stuff. It eats stars. And I was just like, astrophage. And then, like, two lines later, he's like, astrophage. And I was like, yes!
Wow. Thank you. No, you definitely get credit for that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's the only thing I foresaw in the book.
You know your Latin.
A little. I've actually never studied Latin, but I was like, that kind of seems to be the obvious choice. But one thing I really got a kick out of. Now, actually, I had the opposite experience of with Ray Park. Ray. Ray Porter. Thank you. Ray Park is Darth Maul. Yeah. Porter.
Very easy to get mixed up, though. You know.
They both kick serious ass.
I was about to say, you know.
Because you know, I'd listened to all the Bobaverse, books, and also I listened to a book he narrated called The Fold, on the recommendation of Brandon Ushio, who was going to join us tonight, but he has a brand new baby, and alas, could not be here. And every time I listen to him, I'm worried that all I'm going to hear is Bob. But he's so good.
Bob.
The Bob. He is so good that, you know, a chapter in and you forget, at least I did, I forgot I was listening to, I stopped expecting it to be Bob. I would love to interview him. I haven't decided. I haven't talked myself either into or out of trying to see if I can get him on the show. The problem with
I might be able to. We'll talk after.
Okay. You know,
not Ray Parks. And, actually, no. Maybe no. Anyway,
I talked to him too. Darth Maul was the only good thing about Episode One, in my opinion.
I was going to say, and the choreography, but that's the same thing.
But you know, with me, when it comes to inviting personalities onto the show, I have equal dread that they'll say no or that they'll say yes.
Yes.
Most of the time, what happens is they don't say anything. You know, when we started the Starbase, Kennedy said to me, "Oh, stars just they'll be happy to talk to us. They just, you know, they're looking for publicity." And boy, was he wrong about that.
No, because the first thing they ask is, what's your listenership? Never tell them.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's with BrewDog. You remember when BrewDog was like embryonic and they were just, everybody was starting to find it, and we had that mass tasting around the world we felt like we'd introduced people to BrewDog. We'd been talking to one of their marketing ladies, and it was all really good. And I was thinking, yeah, could be some, you know, chance for endorsement here, maybe, or something like that. And then one day she just asked the question, so what's your listenership? Never heard from them again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got a couple of people on because I was under the impression that like 17,000 was an appropriate, was an accurate term. And then, and a certain person actually used that number to me and then later went, where did you get that from? Like, you told me. anyway.
Just lie.
I got a kick out of when who was the Russian scientist? I loved him.
Yeah.
Was it Yuri?
No, Dmitry, wasn't it?
Dmitry. That's. I was like, it was some really...
Dmitry Komarov.
Common Russian name.
Ivan.
But I loved how, because like my first role I ever played on stage was a Russian in high school, and for some reason
I have dropped my voice down way down here and did this really bad Chekhov accent,
and that's exactly what Porter did. I don't know why we think
all Russians have their voices are down here.
Well, you make a shape mistake I often make when I'm doing my flawless Russian accent.
That's also your Spanish accent, isn't it?
Chef Revolutions for 20 knots and engage the impulse drive.
Hey, they launched a new one this week. Maybe that's not so funny. Size of an aircraft carrier.
Oh, really?
Well, almost the size of an aircraft carrier. Yeah, massive submarine that can deploy drone submarines.
Half the size of a Typhoon.
Is it? Okay. I think it's massive anyway.
Jesus, Jack.
Well, let's get Alec Baldwin on there. Okay. This may be one of those I have no clue. What's your favorite part of the book, Andy, in London?
My favorite part of the book is the final reveal with Strat when we find out that, oh no, you're not volunteering. You're being press ganged. You know that? Because didn't see it coming. We were starting to get the hints, and you know we'd had that moment when the prime and the backup science ones were destroyed in the astrophage explosion there, and you know that everyone's there waiting for him to finally step up, and you know he won't. And I have a bit of an issue with Grace in that moment because it's like. Look, if you don't want to do it, just say, I don't want to do it because I'm a coward. Don't start saying, I have to be here for my children. God, you have to be there for your children.
They're not your children.
Firstly that, and also you spent, the last however long, 18 months, 2 years, faffing around on a Chinese aircraft carrier with this Danish bitch you're kind of hoping to get a piece of on the side. Don't make it about the kids. So, you know, him annoying. But when she just says...
They were doing Zoom classes, it's fine.
But when she says... Look, there's a reason I've been keeping this high school guy around here, and it's not because of your insight in astrophage. It's because you have the immunity to comas and all this. You know the science, and I've made sure you've been visiting all these things along the way so that you are qualified. You are the third backup there. And it's like, wow, she really is cold-blooded. I love it. Yes. I mean, even at the end where you get that final bit when he goes to see her and, you know, he's still nervous and you got the Russian soldier behind her and you go, well, I'm not doing it, you can't make it. And he just kind of puts the hand on his shoulder and it's just like, no, you are doing this, my friend. And she very calmly explains, I always thought the Americans had the best memory drugs, but it's the French, actually. And you will have mild amnesia, but I'm guaranteed there'll be no problems. And it's just like, wow, she is... cold-blooded. I love
in
that.
In Soviet Russia, mission volunteers for you.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
you
I
are.
Love how she, my how my she was like, yeah, I'm probably going to jail for all of this, but not right now, and right now I'm saving the planet, so fuck you.
Yeah and you need someone like that in that situation. And you know, you were saying earlier about her court appearances, I loved how she turns up into court tapping away on her iPad and she's going, look, I just came here because you're all in the court at the same time, so I'm saying this once, fuck you, and we're done and moving on. And it's like, I just kind of if he does his next novel or novella, just give me a Strat story. I just want Strat dealing with stuff, you know. It's like, you know, after this has happened, she's just in charge of something else, because yeah, you know, Strat was great. So yeah, she as a whole was my favorite character, but those bits were my favorite bits of the book because didn't see it coming. It completely took me out of left field, and that's quite late in the book. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to kind of, you know, pretend I know any more or more intelligent than anyone else, but you know, you can usually kind of, by 3/4 of the way through a book, you're usually on board, and unless they're going to throw you a real curveball, you know that the draft beats are coming and all that. That one came completely out of left field. And this is like, it's like a buster from Bob. It's just like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, because I'm usually by van driving along and I'm listening to stuff, and I don't say much out loud because it's all going into my head. But there are like 3 or 4 moments of the book where it's an expletive or a laugh out loud, or I think at that point I just went, oh, well played, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. New Zealand, Andy, what was your favorite part of the book?
Well, I have the total opposite take from you guys, actually. My favorite part of the book was learning the language and, like, the, kind of making the first contact with Rocky. Because for me, I'm not reading this for character. I could care less about the characters in this. I actually felt the time on Earth was a distraction from the good bits, which was just solving these problems.
Fair enough.
I think, as we talked about, this is very much like in the same formula as The Martian, and it's very, or at least the bits that are just in space, it's very uncomplicated. You know, there's no needing to care about the character. Are all good guys not entirely good, and all bad guys not entirely bad? Do we care about their growing? Do we care about anything, where they've come from, who they're talking to? No, I'm here for, like, let's do cool sciencey stuff and just keep throwing them at me, keep it rolling. That's what keeps me turning the pages. And then all the, yeah, the stuff.
I was expecting it's betrayal good. From Rocky. I was expecting a betrayal at some point.
I thought the Taumiba thing, I didn't think for a second it was what was actually happening. I thought he'd sabotaged him.
Yeah.
And he'd played a really long game.
Yeah.
Really?
When he came on board with the Zenonite, I was waiting for, once he's in the ship and all that, he's just going to accidentally make a hole, and then Raylan has to find a way to kind of lock himself into an airlock and solve a problem of all his atmospheres being converted.
And now, you know, he's under attack by the alien.
I was legitimately surprised that that didn't happen.
Yeah.
I want to actually draw a comparison with this one, Carl Sagan Contact. There's such a, not naive, but an innocent kind of hopefulness to the logic of Carl Sagan's kind of philosophy about contacting extraterrestrials. This is all about using, you know, the common interest of figuring out math on the universal scale, and that's what binds us all together, and the love of math, and just the naked truth
of a very face of God.
Exactly. And I felt that there's really great, that Project Hail Mary really, like, touches on that note. So for me, that's definitely my favorite aspect of it.
I say it every time, it's got an S on the end. So that's
what does?
Boz, what's your favorite part?
Mathematics ends in an S, so the short is maths, not math.
Ah, okay.
I'll never let it lie. Sorry.
You enjoy playing with Legos?
Damn you! favorite moment. Do you know what? The bit that's probably my favourite moment is the most emotionally contrived moment of the entire book, because I'm that guy, like I already said. So it's the, he's gone back to save Rocky. You think Rocky's dead. Rocky's not dead, but his voice, Rocky! His voice is 7 octaves higher. You came back to save me! And I had a tear. It got me. Yeah, it got me.
Absolutely.
And if it wasn't that, it was the very, very end scene. With the instrument, because I should have seen that coming, and it was only as he walked in, I was like, oh, of course, that's what he would do. I loved it. Yeah, so mine are both Rocky related, I have to say. What about you, Rick?
Exactly the same. That part tore it. Tears. It was like, you know, when they separated, And it, you know, like I said earlier, when they didn't just kind of jump ahead to him going back to Earth for a hero's welcome and put Strat in jail or kick her in the face or whatever, or marry her or whatever, I was like, all right, something's up here.
Home for tea and medals.
Yeah. And so when he you know, he's watching Rocky, and then he sees that Rocky's not moving anymore, and he finds the Talmuba in his, and he's like, Jesus Christ, if this is happening to me, it's happening to him, and I've got to go back. And I'm like, no, are you insane? But then, you know, Grace, it's you and I, and you know, they can't hug because they'd kill each other. But it would be, yeah, you know, it might, as close to a hug as they could get. And then, and
fist
then,
me. That's probably my biggest laugh of the book, I think.
I'm a big fan of Arthur C. Clarke.
Oh yeah.
And I think the ending of this book was very Clarkish, where
good Clark or bad Clark?
Before he started working with that other guy.
Okay. Kubrick.
Yeah, so, no. Oh, well, yeah. Oh, that's a whole nother show. I'll be glad to talk about that. Fuck Kubrick. who was he? Where it was towards the end, when he was towards the end of his life, he was working, and I can't remember the guy's name, but I didn't particularly like the director. But anyway, you know, Clark was really good about just kind of throwing people into a bizarre alien landscape and then just leaving them there. You know, one of my favorite books of all time, one of the first non-Star Trek science fiction books I ever read. Yeah, nerd. I don't know if you can see it. Never mind. I have a Star Trek tattoo. was a book called Rendezvous with Rama, which is an amazing book if you've never read it. And it's,
audiobook's great for that as well.
Okay, maybe you found a better one, because the one they've got on Audible is awful, because the narrator for some reason seems to think because he's reading science fiction he's got to read it like a robot, and it's awful.
Well, that's definitely not the one I listened to then, but
okay,
no,
then
you
send
have to
me
read
link,
it like
please.
Shatner, of course.
Oh my god, Bars, what have you done? You've invoked in the podcast. He will now.
Actually, I keep banging on about Scott Sigler. He has a series called the Galactic Football League, starts with a book called The Rookie, and he introduces an alien species into that, and they have the most ridiculous names. I won't go into the etymology, but they're all very silly Earth names for these really scary monster things. And there's one called Cormorant Bumblepuff, and when Scott narrates him, he narrates him just like William Shatner. Superb.
I really want to listen to those books.
They're amazing.
One book I've tried to read, I tried to listen to. We've had this discussion many times. Did not work for me.
Which one was it? It was Infected.
Alien book.
Well, a lot of them are.
The Alien in the Alien Universe book.
Oh, Phalanx. Oh no. Just get The Rookie and listen to it already.
Okay. Yeah. Because
and then you'll listen to the next six.
I'm not saying it's a bad book. I'm saying it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
It's very well written and boring as fuck.
Well, it's the only book that doesn't exist in the Siglerverse, so you've got a whole other universe of books that interlace to each other that you could go and read. But yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
and again, I've lost what we were talking about.
You were talking
with Rama, comparisons to this.
Oh, right.
And Clark. Yes.
Rendezvous with Rama is a great book, but absolutely nothing happens in it. But it's still a wonderful read.
Yeah.
And Clark was good at that. He would write a book where, you know, that's why I couldn't watch the Childhood's End series that came out a couple of years ago, because like halfway through the first episode, I was like, they're and I understand they're putting a whole bunch of shit that didn't happen in the book into this movie, because it's not a book that works as a movie. It's a book that's in your head. And I have similar qualms and worries about the upcoming Foundation series. Have any of y'all read Asimov's Foundation books?
No. Okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to the series mostly because it's got Anderson Doss.
Yeah, and I'm I watched the trailers and I'm like, this looks really awesome and has almost nothing to do with the book it's supposedly based on.
How do you think the movie's going to go for Project Hail Mary? Are there going to be things that they can't quite pull off that they're going to have to change? It's not an internal monologue, isn't it? It's written as like a diary.
Well, and it's also a lot of, here's a very scientific problem, and here's a lot of math to solve it, and then here's the solution, and then we go to the next problem.
They did it well with the Martian, though, didn't they?
No. The comparison is The Arrival, because in there you have another alien contact story with an alien language and a species with the septopods. Yeah. But you've also got that flashback element as well, which doesn't initially make sense as to what's going on. I mean, if anything, that might be to the detriment of a film project of Project Hail Mary, because it's going to invite comparisons in the same way Arrival ended up drawing comparisons to Contact, with a lot of people just saying, oh, it's just Contact again. It's not.
That was a great film.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Arrival yet.
Spoilers.
Read one of those... I keep forgetting it exists, and I know I want to watch it, I keep forgetting.
I won't spoil the end of it for you, but it's very good. You should check it out.
That's what I've heard. I've heard it's really good, and I keep forgetting.
I went with Lee Metcalf to see it.
Had a little tear.
My things.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. I think we're keep this short and sweet. It's short for us anyway, an hour, 20 minutes or so. So, any do y'all have any final words you want to say about this book, Andy from London?
It's a very good book. It really is. I really enjoyed it. It's very good hard science fiction. I think it suffers a little bit from following The Martian and Artemis, and you know, the science fiction landscape of since The Martians has come out, we've had things like the Bobbyverse series and everything, so there's a lot more out there, you know, for you. I as we've already said, you know, it's worth doing the audio version just because of the way Rocky and his interactions are done there. But yeah, it's absolutely worth your time, and it's a really fun and enjoyable listen. If you enjoyed The Martian, you'd probably enjoy this. So, I will give it 4 chords on my keyboard, which I don't have here, but that's a positive thing.
Okay, New Zealand, Andy.
Yeah, I'm just in love with this book. It's great. I can't recommend it highly enough. And as I've kind of said, I think it's a real return to form. You know, The Martian, you rooting for that hero. All of humanity is behind that one guy. In Artemis, it's kind of inverted, and that one person is fighting all of the forces, and I feel like that's a dip. And this one is just real simple. Back to the good stuff.
Cool. Boz?
Yeah, it's... In terms of Alien Contact, that was... I wasn't expecting that, because I expected him to stick with the Martian type thing. I thought, it's another space mission thing. Am I going to enjoy this? And actually, when it went there, I was like, oh, you did that. I like that. So if you like that sort of thing, it's great. But also, you've still got the nerdy chemistry, mathsy, all that. It seems really well researched. He's clearly a very smart man. He's a lot smarter than me. So,
He's a computer engineer, wasn't he, in his former life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got like tons of friends at NASA that he consults regularly on a lot of stuff. So,
well, yeah, because they were reading The Martian at NASA and applauding it as it went along. So, I mean, that's pretty good going if you can get that result. So, yeah, so I guess I will give it 8 liquefied pots of xenonite out of 10.
And I absolutely adore this book. You know, like I said, I was a bit leery because, you know, a lot of times when, you know, a person's first book or album or whatever is so good, it's really hard to follow it up. But I think, you know, I haven't read Artemis yet, but I will. But this was very much a return to form. and, you know, the author saying, all right, this is my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And while it's good to push your limits and push yourself, it's also good to stick with what you know. And I think he did a really good job of kind of melding the kind of astronaut on his own of The Martian with a bigger picture of, you know, the, you know, an apocalypse coming to the Earth, and a very plausible one. Hmm. And then, you know, like Boz said, and as I alluded to at the beginning, we were talking about when we got to the chapter where the alien ship shows up, I was like, what? Because again, I was not expecting anything that fantastical in an Andy Weir book. But then he went ahead and made it very believable and made it very plausible and very acceptable. And you know, the relationship between Rocky and Rylan was wonderful. I love the fact that the Iridians were advanced in some ways, but absolutely not in other ways. And that was a beautiful combination. How, you know, they built this Titanic ship and just threw it out into space that they didn't even in any way understand. But they didn't know that radiation existed, and they didn't understand relativity. You know, it was...
Wasn't that great when that, just that moment when he realizes they don't understand, they did this Newtonian?
Well, and another wonderful thing is, you know, the Martian, you know, he talked like we do. There were a lot of bad words in the Martian. I loved how high school teacher Rylan was right up until he saw Rocky's ship for the first time, and we get the first "oh fuck" in the book. It was so well played. It was perfect.
And the little hints to that of like, "holy shit" or whatever he says. He said, "really? That's my response to an extreme situation? Who the hell am I?" Yeah. So that was well done. A great way to increase your audience, you know.
So, folks, if you haven't gathered by now, we all really enjoyed this book and strongly recommend it. So all that's left is let's pitch, plug, and promote. So, London Andy, tell us about where folks can find your stuff.
Oh, well, if you've enjoyed this and want to hear more random stuff from me, I do a couple of podcasts. They're all over at rogue2media.com. With myself and Mr. Elton, we have Into the Expanse, where we talk about The Expanse, the TV show. And it's a companion show where we kind of, each episode, we do a podcast about and say little things you might have missed and things like that. It usually plays out that Elton hasn't seen stuff before, but I watch it all as soon as I can. So, you know, if that gives you a sense of what it's like. And there's also The Great Derelict, which is a podcast about everything and anything to do with science fiction. I just did a podcast on For All Mankind, and I've got one coming out this week on Westworld. And at some point, cool, I'll probably do one on Project Hail Mary.
Very groovy. New Zealand Andy.
Yeah, I'm at Cree Yoohoo on Twitter. I do the Stargate SG-1 podcast called Cree Yoohoo. I'm just doing watch through Stargate SG-1 at the moment. And next, it's I was thinking of Westworld 2. Or maybe MASH. I'll see how I go.
And you might actually, if you go back a couple of episodes on Open the Iris, hear Andy on that too. Boz, what the fuck are you doing these days?
Working myself to death. In terms of podcasting, if you'd said this to me like 6 years ago, yeah, I'd do a fitness podcast. I mean, I'd have laughed you out of the flipping building. But yeah, I do a podcast called Better Hit the Mat Podcast, allegedly a fitness podcast is the tagline. And it's me and three idiots from America who all are either instructors or trainee instructors in DDP yoga, which is the thing that's basically saved my life. There's a big community around that. It's very niche, but it's us. So even if you don't know what the subject matter is, it's worth checking out because we're very silly. It's a video podcast. We use StreamYard like this, and it's not live. So if somebody says something stupid or something that just sparks my imagination. They'll get someone else's face edited over theirs at some point. I have a lot of fun with the edits. This week we had somebody whose internet connection kept freezing, so he'd be like, and then it would suddenly move. So when it suddenly moved, I'd just put a sound effect over it. And after about the fourth time, that became a bit funny. So yeah, we just piss around and everything else. I have a rare little stint of podcasts coming out over this summer. I've been accepted onto the summer series panel with the podcast Under the Stairs, which is one of the best horror podcasts on the planet. And every year, the insane man at the helm of this, Duncan, takes every...
like 40 shows a week or something?
Yeah, he doesn't sleep. He just doesn't ever sleep. He does four... at least four shows a week he puts out. But what he does every year is the summer series, and I'm guessing this will be the last one because we're in the 2000s, and each show is a decade in horror, and there are four hosts. They pick two movies each, and then there are two wildcard movies. We then review all of those movies in one show, then argue about which are the two best. They then go forward to the big roundup show where all of the hosts get onto one show. Fuck, that's messy. And we decide what the top three movies of the decade are. Yeah, so I've got 2010 and 2017, which are interestingly different years. 2017 is insanely strong. One of my picks should win the entire thing, or I'm going to be very upset. Because it's okay. Literally the best horror film ever made. But if you want to hear what that is, you'll have to listen in. But we've done 2010, and that show was 3 hours and 15 minutes long. So, yeah. Probably the first and last time I'll do that particular endeavor, but yeah, that's a lot of fun. And I still get to talk horror, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Little Pot of Horrors is one of my favorite shows, even though I don't like horror movies.
Was,
yeah. Someday again, you all have gone away before and come back, so you know, like Sam Raimi's Deadites, I don't think you're going to be fully dead.
Actually, Duncan said it the other day. He says, you're like a veteran podcaster. You've been doing it longer than any of us. I said, yeah, but in terms of actual output, Duncan, you're like hours ahead of me, because putting out four shows a year doesn't really count.
So. You must wait until the next full moon and those enchantments. We'll summon the podcast back.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Starbase 66 and Open the Iris, our Stargate SG-1 listen-along podcast. And I've just started a new old show. I've just taken over as the host of the Prime Direction.
Prime Directive.
God damn it. I'm the one who helped come up with the name of the damn show, and I can never remember it when I'm talking about it. Where it's a Star Trek show where I interview people and they tell me their Star Trek stories. So if any of y'all want to come on the show, let me know. I will be happy to have you aboard. and there's tons of other fun stuff on the Infinite Potato Alliance. There's Captain Game Show. There's That Star Trek Podcast. There's the Super Fan Talk Podcast. There's Trial by Pilot. There's World War G. I think that's all of them. Maybe. I don't know. I'm really bad at remembering anything.
There's a reason. So, you can go back through 10 years of podcasts that have me and Rick involved, and it's just me giving him shit for being old in all of them. So it's a thing.
So thanks for tuning in, folks. Deb, I love you. Thanks for coming on tonight, for listening tonight. Everybody else, love you too. Take care. Tell us what you thought about the book. I always hate ending shows because I'm so bad at it. We're done. Goodbye.
Lip to a close.
Nailed it.
I should go.